I saw him sign it with my own two eyes.
Was the transaction witnessed?
Lauderback said nothing.
If the transaction was not witnessed, then it will be your word against his, Mr. Lauderback.
It'll be the truth against a lie.
Gascoigne declined to answer this. He returned the contract to the envelope and smoothed it flat over his knee.
It's a set-up, Lauderback said. I'll take him to court. I'll have him flayed.
On what charge?
False pretenses, of course,
Lauderback said.
Impersonation. Fraud.
I'm afraid that the evidence will bear out against you.
Oh, you're afraid of that, are you?
The law has no grounds to doubt this signature,
Gascoigne said, smoothing the envelope a second time,
because no other documentation survives Mr. Crosby Wells, official or otherwise, that might serve as proof of his hand.
Lauderback opened his mouth. He seemed about to say something, but then he shut it again, shaking his head.
It was a set-up, he said. It was a set-up all along.
Why do you think Mr. Carver saw the need to take an alias with you?
The politician's answer was surprising.
I've done some digging on Carver, he said. His father was a prominent figure in one of the British merchant trading firms, Dent and Co. You might have heard of him. William Rochfort Carver.
No?
Well, anyway, sometime in the early 50s, he gives his son a clipper ship, the Palmerston, and the son starts trading Chinese wares back and forth from Canton under the banner of Dent and Co. Carver's still a young man. He's being coddled, really, becoming master of a ship so young. Well, here's what I found out. In the spring of 1854, the Palmerston gets searched when it's leaving the Sydney Harbour. Oh, just a routine job. And Carver's found to be foul of the law on several counts. Evading duty, and failing to declare, and a pile of other misdemeanours. Each small enough that a judge might turn a blind eye. But the charges come in all at once. When they're stacked up like that, the law has to come down. He's given 10 years at Cockatoo, and that's 10 years of penal servitude, no less. A real dishonour. The father's furious. Revokes the ship, disinherits the son, and as a final touch, makes sure to tarnish his name at every dock and shipyard in the South Pacific. By the time Francis Carver gets out of jail, he has about as good a character as Captain Kidd, in seafaring circles at least. No shipowner's going to lease a ship to him, and no crew's going to take him on.
And so he assumed an alias.
Exactly, said Lauderback, sitting back.
I am curious to know why he only assumed an alias with you,
Gascoigne said lightly.
He does not seem to have assumed the name Wells in any other context, save for when he purchased this ship. He introduced himself to me, for example, as Mr. Francis Carver.
Lauderback glared at him.
You read the papers, he said. Don't make me spell it out to you. I've made my apology in public. I won't do it again.
Gascoigne inclined his head.
Ah, he said, Carver assumed the alias Francis Wells in order to exploit your former entanglement with Mrs. Wells.
That's it, said Lauderback. He said that he was Crosby's brother. Told me he was settling a score on Crosby's behalf, on account of my having made a bad woman of his wife. It was an intimidation tactic, and it worked.
I see,
said Gascoigne, wondering why Lauderback had not explained this so sensibly to Thomas Balfour 2 months ago.
Look, said Lauderback, I'm playing straight with you, Mr. Gascoigne, and I'm telling you that the law is on my side. Carver's break with his father is commonly known. He had 1,000 provocations to assume an alias. Why, I could call in the father's testimony if need be. How would Carver like that?
Not very well, I should imagine.
No,
cried Lauderback.
Not very well at all.
Gascoigne was annoyed by this.
Well, I wish you luck, Mr. Lauderback, in bringing Mr. Carver to justice, he said.
Spare the bromide,
Lauderback snapped.
Talk to me plain.
As you wish, Gascoigne said, shrugging. You know, without my telling you, that proof of provocation is not evidence. A man cannot be convicted simply because it can be proved that he had a good reason to commit the crime in question.
Lauderback bristled.
Do you doubt my word?
No, indeed, said Gascoigne.
You just think my case is weak. You think I don't have a leg to stand on.
Yes, I think it would be very unwise to take this matter to court, said Gascoigne. I'm sorry to speak so bluntly. You have my compassion for your troubles, of course.
But Gascoigne felt no compassion whatsoever for Alistair Lauderback. He tended to reserve that emotion for persons less privileged than himself, and although he could acknowledge that Lauderback's current situation was pitiable, he considered the politician's wealth and eminence to be ample consolation for whatever inconveniences the man might be encountering in the short term. In fact, enduring a spot of injustice might do Lauderback a bit of good. It might improve him as a politician, thought Gascoigne, who was, in his private adjudications at least, something of an autocrat.
"I'll wait for the magistrate," said Lauderback. "He'll see sense."
Gascoigne tucked the envelope into his jacket next to his cigarettes.
"I understand that Carver is now attempting to draw down funds from your protection and indemnity scheme in order to finance the debts that he incurred in disposing of the shipwreck."
"That is correct."
"And you wish to refuse him access to this money?"
"Also correct."
"On what grounds?"
Lauderback turned very red.
"On what grounds?" he cried. "The man has stiffed me, Mr. Gascoigne. He was planning this from the outset." "You're a fool if you think I'll take it lying down. Is that what you're telling me, to take it lying down?"
"Mr. Lauderback," Gascoigne said, "I do not presume to give you any kind of advice at all. What I am observing is that no laws appear to have been broken. In his letter to Mr. Garrity, Mr. Carver made it very plain that he is acting on Mr. Wells' behalf. For Mr. Wells, as you know, is dead. To all appearances, Carver is merely doing the charitable thing in settling matters as the shipowner's proxy, because the shipowner is not able to do the job himself. I do not see that you have any evidence to disprove this."
"But it's not true!" Lauderback exploded. "Crosby Wells never bought that ship. Francis Carver signed that bloody contract in another man's name. It's a case of forgery, pure and simple."
"I'm afraid that will be very difficult to prove," said Gascoigne.
"Why?" said Lauderback.
"Because, as I've already told you, there is no proof of Crosby Wells' true signature," said Gascoigne. "There were no papers of any kind in his cottage, and his birth certificate and his miner's right are nowhere to be found."
Lauderback opened his mouth to make a retort, and again seemed to change his mind.
"Oh," said Gascoigne suddenly, "I've just thought of something."
"What?"
said Lauderback.
"His marriage certificate," said Gascoigne.